Good afternoon, everyone. Today I have with me Peter Temple, futurist, market analyst, talking about cycles. And when I mean cycles, truly, the science of prediction through cycles. And when we talk about cycles, most people are talking about decadal cycles or multi-century cycles. Let's talk about solar cycles, business cycles, market cycles, economic cycles, and how the climate ties all of this in together with the ebbs and flows of our economy, human civilization, the apex of our science, and the decline into the dark ages. It's all overlapping into these cycles. And when I was doing a little bit of research, I found this chart, the Atlantic Multidecadal Oscillation overlapping with the bond yield, literally at a 98% correlation. So if we're just talking something on a 60-year cycle that's driving the bond yield of our economics on this planet, and the Santa Ana winds can affect everybody's psyche to send them off into depression and different types of not normal thinking when the winds come from the desert, what's the sun going to do when we get into the grand solar minimum? Peter, I'm going to let it go from there because I'm rambling too much. I want to hear what you have to say about cycles.
Well, you're covering up everything. I was just going to let you go. I thought that was great, and I was here to listen. I agree with all of that. And I have certain people that I have researched that have written and talked about this. Most of them are deceased now, because this is not new information a lot. I mean, we're adding to it. But a lot of these people came out of the 30s, interestingly enough. So cycles, and there's a guy who's very much into cycles and into the stock market called Bob Prechter, who runs Daily Wave International, said to me, you know, Peter, you're going to be very busy once the market crashes, because he said to me, cycles are cyclical. People don't get interested in cycles until things turn really bad. And so that is kind of what we're expecting. But a lot of these people in the 30s and 40s wrote some terrific books. And of course, the guru that I have followed and researched for a long time is a Dr. Raymond Wheeler, who spent half of his life researching climatic cycles. And he went right back to 600 BC, and he actually recorded all of the events, every major event internationally, and he also recorded all of the temperature and rainfall data, and you can follow them, and you can see how these, where the tops of these climatic cycles are, and you can also equate them with the tops of the social cycles. So it's really fascinating stuff, and of course the cycles are harmonic. Steve Pitts is another person that I might talk about a little bit later, who found that there were 6.3-year cycles, which is, of course, the old 7-year cycle from the Bible. Then there are 18.5-year cycles, which is sort of 3 times 6.3, which is the lunar nodal cycle and also the real estate cycle. Then you go into the Kondratiev cycle, which is about 57 years, 54 to 57 years, which is 3 times 18.5. And then you go into the 172-year cycle, which is a major collapse cycle. And then 3 times that is the 516-year cycle, which is a major it's more of a power shift cycle. And then there's the 1500-year cycle, 3 times that, which is a civilization cycle. So all of these, I mean, there are smaller cycles within those, but to me, those are the major ones that I look for. Wheeler also talked about a 25-year, 100-year, 500-year, and so there are other cycles in the climatic area, which I'm sure, David, you know a lot about.
Well, I was going to peg right on the Gleisberg cycle, which is an 80-year cycle as well, and then we came into the relational cycle from John Casey at 206-year, and then those multiples of 206 go right up into when you're talking about 4 cycles of the 516 come right into the same equivalent number of cycles if you're going to multiply by 200. If you're multiplying by 500 and by 200, eventually you're going to come up into these multi-millennial cycles that are going to overlap, more powerful cycles overlapping on top of each other. There might be smaller cycles running within the larger cycle, overpowering that, overlapping that, that is the main driver of the current cycle. So when we're talking about, you know, 6.3-year cycles, we could talk about 7-year or 9-year cycles also, with ocean pulse water going up into the Arctic, causing heavier ice cover. And there's just so many of these other climatic cycles based on almost the exact same numbers you're talking about.
Right. And so when you get these cycles sinking or coinciding, you get these cycle tops and they all head down at the same time. That's when you get these major catastrophes. And so I see these patterns that are happening over and over and over again. And the challenge with the larger cycles, of course, that nobody has been alive throughout one of these cycles. Because when I talk about a major collapse cycle at 172 years, even 80 years, which we can go back, you know, 85 years to 1929 when we had a major collapse, this is a much larger one we're going to go into, and I equate that with 172-year cycle that was at the top of was 2007, and you go back to 1835, which is 172 years. You had the 1837 crash, which was trying to think of what they called it, largest depression in U.S. history to that time. It also affected Britain, and then you had 1663, which was 172 years earlier than that, and that was a major collapse in Britain. And then you go to 1492, which was interesting because that's a cycle top, which of course was the discovery of the U.S. Of America, and then of course there was a big crash right after that in the years after that, where you had Italy and all of the major international banks there collapsed. So this stuff, and what I'm doing right now, the research I'm doing right now, is following these 172-year cycles and seeing that we have the same inflation that starts out at the bottom of them and ends up at the top, and then everything crashes again, and then we start out at that 172-year delineation, and then it starts all over again, and slowly inflation starts again, and everything gets good, and then it crashes again. And this happens over and over, over and over, and I'm tying it down to these 172-year cycles. So I think that the big opportunity, if we can spread the word, is that, my goodness, if we could get governments to actually understand this stuff and plan ahead, maybe we wouldn't have these incredible depressions. We would be able to smooth the field, if you want, understanding that we need to save for a rainy day, and then we bring that financial. Because, you know, David, what we're going through right now in the U.S., I mean, we've had Florida nailed. We've had Texas nailed. We've also had Puerto Rico recently. And so this is going to affect the food supply, which we already have predicted. And so food, we're going to go into a problem with our food supply internationally, because we've had weather calamities all over the place, in different countries. It's not just in America here. And so this is very predictable. It's happened at these cycle tops before, and we're right at the top of the market right now, the U.S. market. I give it maybe 5 weeks, and then we're going to see a top in the U.S. market, and that's going to come down, and it's going to be a major drop. And I don't think a lot of people are ready for that. But, I mean, it's very predictable. I see it. I trade the market. And if we still want to talk specifically about the market, I can show you all kinds of cycle information within the market and Fibonacci. The whole market runs on Fibonacci ratios in terms of the golden mean. It's all through the lengths of waves in the market, and it's really quite extraordinary. And I do that on a regular basis, and I have a site with a subscription where you can actually, there's a free part of my site, a free blog that you can access, which I do a weekly summary of where the S&P 500 is going. And then I have a service that I do a daily video and tell people where all the U.S. dollar currencies are going, gold, oil, and the U.S. market. Cycles really determine our future. And a lot of people don't understand that we are not the biggest creature in the universe. The universe really controls what happens to us here on Earth, and we need to start to understand that.
I would agree. And when we talk about market tops and society tops, when we reach literally the pinnacle of our civilization during the cycle, and we see it again and again, we get to these pinnacles, and then for some reason, we just drop off a cliff and we're set back hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. And you got to wonder really what it is. And it keeps happening with such frequency, and it's so repetitive, and it's so calculable that the ancients were always about cyclical time. It's really only in this modern era do we start thinking in a linear time frame. I mean, every temple you go to, every bit of iconography, everything that was produced in the ancient past revolved around cycles. There was nothing linear. And you start to ask yourself, talking about the economy of the planet, is it really the work that we do and the goods we produce, Or is it really the food production of a country that's driving the economy? Because if there's no food or limited food, then everything else trailing behind that, there's the knock-on effects are gargantuan. So for me, it's more about the general economy, their output, or the value of a nation is basically tied to its food production. And we're quickly going into losses that nobody's going to expect. And talking about the futures market, when the real harvests come in and they're putting those chits in the silo to get tally that at the end of the year, futures market's going to reel. It's going to be shocked at how low the actual harvests were, and then the protein content for the wheat specifically, how terrible the protein content is. It's just going to rattle the markets at the end of the year, I do believe.
And to that, and in terms of the extent to which the market and finance is going to drop, we're predicting the Dow's, what, at 20, I don't have it right in front of me, but about 22,000 or so. We're predicting within 5 years the Dow will be under 3,000. And people would say, well, that's just not going to happen. It's incredible. Well, that takes the market down about 90-85%, and that's exactly what happened in 1929. So when you say to me that it can't happen, it has, and it's happened over and over and over. And the thing that always concerns me, of course, is people don't look back on history. We don't pay any attention to it, and the history is our future. That's because it just happens over and over and over, as you know.
When we talk about a human lifetime, my grandparents were terrified of what happened during the Great Depression. And I do remember after my grandparents passed away, we went into their house to help clean out a lot of things. They had saved everything for 50 years. I mean, the twist ties on bread loaves, and they had drawers full of that. They saved everything. Something terrified them. Now, we've lost that terrified feeling of whatever occurred in the 1930s and the Great Depression scarred a generation. I mean, it scarred them that they took that through the rest of their lives. We haven't experienced anything close to this. And this market correction and this reduction of food coming on, I firmly believe it's in a multi-millennial cycle. I mean, far beyond what's coming up with these, you know, generational, multi-generational cycles. I'm firmly in the belief that there's a heavier cycle, something much more powerful about to hit our planet's food supply. And then again, with food supply comes economy, and they can't separate the two. That's why I'm so heavy into my channel. We need to really prepare for what's about to happen. But they want to keep talking about CO2. Nobody wants to talk about effects of the sun on our climate. It's ridiculous.
I laugh at the CO2 stuff that has gone on. I mean, this is an absolute scam, this thing that has gone on with global warming. And you understand that nobody's really talking about global warming anymore. It's all climate change. And, of course, climate changes. So if people say to me, do you believe in climate change? And I say, well, yes, I do. And they start talking about man-made warming. And I go, no, that's something completely different than climate change. But we have got so used to the economy just expanding the way it does. And I want to get into, you know, the money supply. I don't think, unless you want to. But
would love to. I'm a big fan of crypto. Oh, and I love the way that the actual traditional Forex markets are leading the crypto market. Because, I mean, basically they're both currencies. You got a digital currency in the form of Bitcoin, but, I mean, you're talking about Forex leading. So you can definitely see some retracement in the Fibonacci sequences. I trade too, and you can start to see all these patterns. But it seems that the Forex is actually leading the crypto. So you want to talk about that? I'm well into it with you.
Well, crypto stuff is all BS as far as I'm concerned. It's all already topped from an Elliott perspective, so that is going to come down. It's another example of what happens at a bubble. It's like the South Sea bubble and all the other bubbles we had. You're going to see all of that drop to absolutely nothing as the market comes down. It is not money. It is not something money is created. And people say a store of value. Well, not it can be, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. But it needs to be something that you can use for transactions, and it needs to be right through society. So I don't – I'm a Jamie Dimon guy saying that, hey, this is just one of those little fads. It's going to be awful for people that get caught in it because it's going to come straight down. As far as I'm concerned, Bitcoin has topped. Some of the other cryptocurrencies have already topped. There are a few out there that have not quite. But from looking at cycles and the work that I do, it's very clear that they've topped.
Yeah, can I talk
so
about
So that's my perspective. So.
Peter, can I add something about Jamie Dimon there for a moment? I think it's of utmost importance to talk about Jamie Dimon's statement talking about Bitcoin. You know, at that point, at when he was talking in the market about, yeah, Bitcoin's a terrible thing, it's exactly saying the same thing you did. Their European arm, fourth largest buyer of Bitcoin during that day. So Jamie Dimon's talking over here in America on a conference call, and over in Europe, they're the fourth largest buyer of Bitcoin, JP Morgan was. So, you know, you get these mixed messages here coming out with, where is it really truly going to move? I think it's kind of a replacement for the economic system that's about to evaporate because of higher food prices. There's got to be some replacement. If the traditional market, you're talking about a reduction all the way down to 3,000 or so, what's going to be used for value? Everybody will be completely wiped out at that point. There'll almost be nothing left. This will be like 1929 times 10 or 100, and then how are people going to regroup from that, do you think?
As far as I'm concerned, it's got nothing to do with Bitcoin. The financial system, right, is going to collapse, and it has to be changed because, you know, let me just kind of take you for a couple of minutes to, well, it might be a little longer than that, but the problem with our financial system right now is, and I'll just use Canada as an example, the U.S. is exactly the same with the Federal Reserve, is that there are private banks that really are controlled by the Bank of International Settlements and the central bankers in Europe. In Canada, from 1937, when we created the Bank of Canada, which is our central bank, and we have one of the only public central banks in, well, yeah, one of the only. There's about a dozen of them in the world. But from 1937 to 1974, we created our own money here. I mean, our government, being a sovereign, created its own money, and that's actually in our Constitution that we are supposed to do that. So we had our own Canadian dollar, and nobody touched it. In 1974, our prime minister decided that he was going to let the European bankers supply our money for us and charge interest. Now, I understand how money is created. It's basically created these days by clicking on a button, and you create debt, and that's another situation there, but I'm not going to get into that part of it. But we have been charged interest for every penny that is created in this country, and that comes from the European bankers. So the reason that we paid $1 trillion to European bankers in 2012 was because we owed them that much interest. Now, we can create our own money, and the reason that we don't, or one of the big cards that the European bankers have, is that by charging us interest and has a line with them, it allows us to get into the Swiss system, which is, of course, it allows transactions between currencies all over the world, so it just enables trade a lot more than it could be in the past. But we are paying dearly, and all of the G7 countries are in the same situation, and their economies are being ruined as interest payments, and also you can get into the trade agreements that have been affected all over the world as well. But the key thing is the financial situation and the creation of money. And so Canada and the U.S. right now, because the bank, this is the other part of it, governments love to inflate. We're all dealing with a forced dollar now. So you can imagine, because we've inflated it so much, there gets to be a point where you can't inflate it anymore. The value of the currency goes down so much that you can't pay for anything. And this is why, in today's economy, everything you buy falls apart. I mean, I've gone through dishwashers and refrigerators that maybe have a 3 to 4 year lifespan because companies are forced to make them so cheap, also employ fewer people to get their costs down to make these affordable for people. So it's a no-win situation. Russia and the BRICS people, Brazil and all China and all these countries starting to do, because we are attached to the U.S. dollar right now as a reserve currency. They're starting to set up their own currency, and so we're going to have this war between currencies. So yes, David, our financial system has to change. I think it's going to have to go back to countries, their own currencies, so they get away from these central bankers and their tentacles that get into the economy, because they really dictate to countries what they can do financially. And that gets in the way, of course, countries' sovereignty. They should be controlling their own economies, and that's not happening right now. I went on a little bit, but I wanted to kind of explain my view of the world and where we are right now. And this is one of the reasons we're going to have this huge crash.
Yeah, and I'll agree. And I'm glad you went on that long to encompass a lot of the thoughts there. I mean, look over at China. They're having a gold-backed oil reserve fund, literally, true sound money, to do the transactions with. Now, where are you going to find an ounce of gold even to back anything in the United States? You don't. I mean, most of the countries across the planet, how many of them are backing their currencies with gold or any kind of true real money? Even let's go down to silver or, I mean, copper. I mean, who's backing something with a metal if you even want to take it down into that smaller type of valuation for a metal? I mean, we used to have copper pennies in America. We don't have copper pennies anymore. Again, it's the whole thing about making them cheap and light. What are they made of? Zinc and plastic now or something.
Yeah.
So there's no more copper. Even the true value of a penny, which used to contain copper, that's not even there. That's evaporated too. That whole wall. And, you know, you go right back to the Roman Empire when they were doing the same thing with their coins, debasing their coins, where it was supposed to be gold and silver, and they were mixing it down with copper at the time and zinc and nickel and different kinds of metals that weren't silver and weren't gold. So we're back to the Roman Empire times again by, you know, cutting our coins with less valuable metals. One last point. You made me laugh, though, when you talked about the creation of the U.S. dollar is simply clicks of a mouse, and then cryptocurrency is the exact same thing running a blockchain. I mean, you set up your ICO, you're running off of like an Ethereum node or something, and you start off your own coin if there's value or whatever behind it. It's just it's clicks of a mouse.
Well, let me just talk for a moment about how banks create money. And this doesn't matter what country you're in. It's the same situation. We have a debt-based system. So you go to a bank and you get a loan. And what the bank does is they click a button and you have $100,000 in your account. And the accounting goes that if you understand anything about double entry accounting, they create a liability on one side for $100,000 because they owe that money to you. And then they create an asset of $100,000 because eventually that money will come back to them if you repay that loan. So this is the only business that's allowed to create an asset out of nothing because they have created it with a click of the button. The government allows them to do that, and you have $100,000 of debt and you have $100,000 of money into the system. So the only way that the money gets into the economy is through bank loans. And so as people get out more bank loans, more money goes into the economy, but the debt is also as large as the debt that's recorded is as large as the liabilities. Here's the real kicker. We have something called fractional reserve banking. And the fractional reserve system, governments say, well, banks, we're going to let you put, let's say, $100,000 into your vault. And we're going to call that your reserve. And it has to stay there, okay? But you're allowed to loan out 10 times that amount. That will be your base. That's what it's going to be supported by, is that $100,000. So you can actually loan out $1 million. So they do that with, let's say it's 10%, and that's the 10% fractional reserve, which is fairly prevalent in the U.S. and in some other countries. In Canada, we used to have that 10%, but, you know, the banks lobbied the government. We have no reserve, actually, in Canada. Banks do not have any reserve. They just have to make their books work within the bank. So that means that banks don't actually have any money in Canada to support the loans that they put out. So what happens, it's great when the economy expands and everybody pays back their loans, but when the economy stops expanding, and in Canada we have a problem with oil right now, and one of the first things that goes down is a commodity like oil when you're going into a depression. So you're going to have companies defaulting on their loans. You're going to have people being laid off, which has already happened in my city to a great 25% of our downtown core office space is empty at the moment. So that just gives you an idea. And that's primarily because of oil heading down the way it has. So people start to lose their jobs. And of course, what happens then? We have the largest housing bubble, real estate bubble in the world right at the moment. I think Australia is just behind us, and they have sort of a similar financial system situation, and actually a similar story with the creation of their money. Now, of course, they're with the international bankers. But what happens when the economy pulls back, of course, is that people start to default on their mortgages, and that leaves the bank in a really big problem because banks don't have any money. So when they go to get their savings out because they don't have any money and everybody starts to do it at the same time, the banks have a problem, because at most, if they have that 10%, left in the vault, they only have 10% of what's out there. In Canada, they don't have any money. And so if you get a lot of people coming to the bank at the same time, we're going to have a bank run. And there's nothing they can do about that. And if you're with bankers, the banking system, for example, we have our big six banks in Canada, the Royal Bank and a bunch of other ones have already been downgraded by Standard & Poor's, I think, or Moody's, one of the two, because of the financial situation and because they virtually don't have any money. And we are having problems in Canada, certainly in Western Canada. So they're already saying, hey, there's a problem. We've had warnings by the IMF, by the Bank of International Settlements, which I find very funny because they're the part of the problem. And they're saying, okay, Canada has a problem. And in Canada, we've sold all our gold. So we have no gold as a country. So we have nothing to fall back on. So here we have a house of cards financial situation. And the other thing I will just point out to everybody who's listening, when you put your money in a bank, your savings, you are investing in that bank. You do not own that money anymore. The bank gives you a promise that they will pay you back, but you don't own that money. And you don't get anything from the bank. I mean, the interest rate you get from them using your money is so little. Why are people putting in more than they actually have to put in? You only need enough if you're doing transactions with various companies. So to cover that transaction, I think the key thing would be most people, you want to have a major portion of your cash in cash in your house. Buy a safe, get a safety deposit box. These are the things you need because I see a major problem coming up where if you leave it too late, you're not going to be able to get at your money and you're going to have a real challenge getting what you need to get when things get really bad.
Yeah, and I want to say the ill winds of the grand solar minimum are blowing on top of what you just talked about with that house of cards. We, from this point forward, are going to experience never-ending food price rises because of this grand solar minimum. And, you know, 2007, 2008, that 2009 era when oil got really expensive, hell, a lot of people started to carpool. People started to ride bikes. There are different ways to kind of cut your spending based on energy prices. I know things cost more in the supermarket when they were delivered, etc. But this time it's different. It's a never-ending gauntlet of food price rises, and it's going to be double, triple, five times price. Now, you can't not eat every day. I actually did an experiment with myself here to see how far I could go, and I documented how weak I got every day trying to just do daily tasks by eating less or cutting my meals back. And I did this for a whole 2 weeks. I experimented with myself in this modern time when we have a lot of food just to see what it would be like if I cut back my eating. You can't stop eating. It cuts into your performance so greatly, it's unbelievable. Even just cutting back one meal a day is ridiculous yeah. How far back you go. But people are going to stop spending on the greater economy when their food price rises 3, 4, 5 times. They're going to pull all that money out. They used to go to movies. They used to go to restaurants. They would buy those cheap washers and dryers you're talking about. They would buy the new TVs. They would buy houses, cars. If you're afraid of not being able to eat next week, you're not spending anything except on food. So this is a whole wild card that's not being factored into so much the effects of the grand solar minimum on food price rises that are going to yank out of the economy. And that's even going to make things, I think, happen faster for the demise down to the levels you're talking about.
And I do thank you for listening to our last half hour here of Peter Temple and myself discussing issues of finance and cycles. This is the end of part one. Remember, you can find more information at worldcyclesinstitute.com, the science of using prediction and cycles, with different issues ranging from Wheeler's drought clock to the Elliott wave and everything financial in between. Peter Temple's worldcyclesinstitute.com. Hope you can join us for part two. Thank you so much for your time. I hope you got something out of our conversation.